All right, so our next speaker is Professor Barbel Knoiper. It's a pleasure to introduce Dr. Knoiper, who will present this afternoon a talk on techniques to control food cravings, distraction, and acceptance. She's a professor of psychology at McGill University, and as I understand, the presentation will be on drawing from the theories of craving and ways to control craving in the context of food and obesity.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We are switching gears here a little bit, but nevertheless, there are many relations to our previous speaker, and Ruth and I collaborate a lot with each other, and part of it, as she mentioned, there is an increase in cravings when people are sleep deprived, so that's just one of the correlations if we want to make a connection between Ruth's talk and this talk. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is actually a management aspect, not a risk factor, but rather when people experience cravings that bother them, that are unwanted, and that leads them to eat too much food that they shouldn't eat. What can be done simply and simply to help them deal with these cravings? So the overall goal of this research program is to change eating habits through the application of simple cognitive behavioral techniques, and I put here in quotation marks a brain retraining, because what I really have in mind, what my lab has in mind with this, is to develop techniques that are simple, easy to apply for people in their everyday life, easy to learn without any big external help, and that helps them to develop new habits. And every time they experience a craving, deal with it, and then over time, hopefully, even make cravings appear less often. Okay, so what I'm going to talk to you about is where this started from. This actually, the first study I'm going to talk about is not about cravings, but rather how we use the techniques of visualization to increase people's food consumption. And then I will talk about different visualization techniques that people, studies that have tested these. And then in the end, what we are now embarking on are to make use of different mindfulness-based skills to curb cravings. Where this is coming from is widely discussed for decades now, a fact that people are often very well intended to change their behavior. They know they should eat more fruit, they should eat less French fries, and should sleep more. The problem is to bridge the gap between these very, very good intentions. The motivation is there, but then how to execute this and how to always do it. And if you are healthcare providers, then you are at the other side of the desk, you need to teach people how to do this. And so that's a challenge we need to apply to our own lives, but also if we want to help other people change their behaviors, then it's really about getting them to get rid of an old behavior and replace it with a new behavior. And as we know, this is super difficult. So it relates to the very frustrating success or lack of success in getting people who are on a diet to long-term stick to it and keep down their weight and so on. So this is all a little related. This is what I'm referring to, this frustrating gap between intentions and behaviors that needs much more research and much more ideas about how people can bridge this gap. So by now, more than in 1993, quite a long time ago by now, Peter Golubetser started this research on implementation intentions. Another word for that is action plans. It's very simple. The idea here is that when people make very concrete action plans and form them in a when or if then statement, they are more likely to carry out the plan. So an example here is when I see the grapes in the fridge, then I will grab them and eat some of them. This is one implementation intention that I have been applying for 5 years now or so, and I do it every time almost every time when I open the fridge. The grapes are there, the opportunity, I have created the opportunity for eating some fruits in a very easy way. They're in an open bowl, they are washed. I open the fridge door to get something else, some milk or so. Oh, and by the way, I'm grabbing some grapes. And so Golubetser has shown that making these concrete plans where people commit themselves to executing an action when the opportunity arises, increases the chances that they actually do it. And he has shown this over a great number of domains, not health, he's not really in health, achievement, studying for exams, and whatever you can imagine. So it helps people to plan, it helps to commit oneself to it by making this if-then commitment. If the opportunity arises, then I have a concrete plan what I will do. And so when I then see the grapes, I can't close my eyes anymore, they are there, so I just do it. And I don't even think about it. So that it's really important, this commitment that people create for themselves. And so what Gorwitz has stressed in his research is that this makes behavior automatic. And that's what we want, because we really want to create new habits. And so when people form these implementation intentions, then they no longer have to think about it. It basically becomes automatic. They just do it. And they don't. And so that's wonderful, because in that moment when this really works, then they have created a new habit. And he has shown this with experimental studies that actually really show that it becomes automatic in the brain. Okay, so what we in my lab now added, this little addition that we made to that long-standing research and so on, is that we combined these implementation intentions with mental imagery. So we ask people not just to make this plan, which is very cognitive, but rather to imagine themselves carrying it out. And I think it's intuitively very clear that this probably strengthens the effects. You will all probably say, yeah, that makes sense, right? And we know from sports psychology, where people use mental imagery, have used it for forever, I guess, and coaches use it very, very clearly, and athletes and so on, before they do the run, before they do the ski jump and so on, you see them there, right? They have their eyes closed, and they definitely visualize, they image themselves going through the action. And this has been shown, of course, to be extremely effective. And when you do interviews with athletes and you ask them what they do, or when they had a particularly good ski jump or so, then they tell you, you know, I'm imagining it, I'm imaging it, I visualize, I rehearse it in my mind. And this is backed up by research that shows that when people image to do a certain action, it activates the same brain areas that are activated when they actually do it. So it basically is a real mental rehearsal. And so clearly, very straightforwardly, asking people to image, to rehearse the implementation intention should make them stronger. And that's what we showed in our fruit study, where we basically invited all residents of a student residence here in Montreal to participate in our study. We assessed their baseline fruit consumption, and then we asked one group, had a control group and so on, but then asked one group to make these action plans and visualize doing it. And then we had a control group who was just making an implementation intention, and a group who was doing something else. And so as expected, the group here who made implementation and intentions and mentally imaged them, increased their food consumption here the most. They all got a little better, but those in the implementation intention plus mental imagery group more than doubled their food consumption when we assessed this over the 7 days after this little intervention. Okay, so that's very encouraging that this type of simple intervention can actually work. And this brought us to look at cravings and how we can use, again, implementation intentions, but then different types of visualization to curb cravings. And actually, in this first study, we focused on one specific visualization, which we have now replicated, is really very effective. All right, let's talk about cravings. So what's interesting about cravings and links it to imagery is that when people crave, they form very strong images of the food they crave, right? And by images, I'm not just talking about pictures. It's really the smell, the taste, all senses are involved. And so so that's clear, we all know this, and also it has been shown in surveys and so on that people form these very strong images of the craved food. The visual sense is most active in that, but the other senses also are all involved. And then what's important is that people then, when they stay in this craving, the craving's intensity gets fueled by imaging this, right? One imagines it more and more and more, and then until it might be so unbearable that one actually has to go into the bakery and buy this croissant that one imagined. And so that's the elaboration intrusion theory talks about this, how one elaborates more and more about it, and there's no way to stop it. So we are basically looking for a way to stop this so that people can let it go and move on and not indulge. So research has shown that suppression, I won't think of the croissant, doesn't work, right? That's the white elephant studies, you ask a person, don't think of a white elephant, and of course they cannot help but think of a white elephant. So and asking people to think of something else also, so doing something cognitively also works a little, but it's not very effective. So thinking of something else also doesn't work, so then it's clear, what do we do instead? We ask people to replace the craving imagery with very strong, pleasant other imagery, okay? So that's the idea here, replacing craving imagery with strong alternative imagery. And what we came up with in our research, and there might be other ways we're looking into it, is we ask people to image in detail, vividly, a favorite activity. And so a lot of what people, and we leave it up to them because it needs to be personal, right? It needs to be something they're really happy about, like a super happy day at the beach or a lot of people think of their vacation and things like that. So personal, but we instruct them, it has to be, think of it in detail and vividly and just a very pleasant image. All right, so in this craving study, we try to find support that this actually really helps lowering the intensity of cravings. And we were hoping to find that this works through lowering the vividness of the craving imagery, so that because that then really means that it works to replace the craving imagery. So what people did in this study, they first locked their craving intensity for 4 days before, and then we taught them this imagery technique. Again, it's super easy. It's just a little instruction, right, that everybody can learn just within a minute. And then they locked their craving intensity again for another 4 days. And we always use now in these studies these implementation intentions in order to help them always apply this strategy. It's very useful. I use it all the time to get my students to adhere to their deadlines also. It's very helpful. Okay, so, and what these results here show, here's this II plus AI stands for implementation intentions and activity imagery, so imagining their favorite activity. You can see here that they had, only in that group, they had a decrease in craving intensity from baseline to follow-up. In the other, there was no difference. In those who only formed implementation intentions or those here who did a cognitive activity, so thinking of something else didn't really help, and those who just formed the goal to reduce their craving intensity also didn't help. So this was supportive. And then we wanted to definitely know whether it's mediated by the decreased vividness of the craving-related imagery, because that's really what we want. We want to see that it replaces the images of the chocolate, right? And that actually was the case. So you can see here in that activity imagery group, the vividness of the cravings decreased. So whenever they experienced a craving, they thought of something else, and then we asked them, after the activity, how vivid was the image of your craved food? It was significantly lower. That was good. So now I'm going to talk to you where we are going with this right now. I mentioned in the overview that we are looking into mindfulness skills. So just a quick question. I'm just curious, who of you has an idea what mindfulness-based techniques are? Okay, so mindfulness-based techniques or therapy or so is a very upcoming new thing in psychology, I guess. Based has a long tradition and so on and so forth, but it basically, the quintessence is that people can manage things they want to manage by becoming more mindful about them. And now the question is, what does that mean, this nice Eastern Zen-sounding way? And what my graduate student, Julien, is doing right now, he's trying to dissect what is mindful. And so when you read the literature about it, it's quite complex, but what he has done is to break it down into skills. So first of all, we have to become aware, right? We have to become, hey, I have a craving. I mean, some people might not even become aware between that they have a craving and their hand going into the chips, into the bag of chips, right? So the first thing is, I have a craving, realizing it. And the second thing is disidentification, what we call disidentification, to separate myself from the craving. So, yes, I have a craving, but it's not me. I don't have to eat the chips, right? It's not that my hand has to go into the bag of chips. The third is accepting, you know. Accepting it means I can live with this craving. I don't have to act on it. I can live with the fact that I would really like to eat some chips now, but I don't have to eat them, okay? And so what we did in this study that's right now ongoing is that we give people instructions either to just become aware or to become aware and disidentify from it or to become aware and accept it and just let it go. And then there's this mention of urge, wave serving or so. It comes, but then it goes. To give people, remind people that a craving comes, but it also goes. If I don't act on it, I will not run around in 2 weeks still thinking of the bag of chips if there's no one available. So it goes. And so so people were assigned to these conditions of the combinations, and we have only preliminary data on this right now, but the design of the study is complex and interesting because we have two lab visits with the people separated by 2 weeks. They come into the lab, we induce a chocolate craving. It's a very popular study in our department. We induce a chocolate craving in them and then have them apply the newly learned strategy and measure their craving after. Then we send them home and they log their cravings for chocolate to us on smartphones for 2 weeks. And then they come back. We do so we have the logs over the 2 weeks and we teach them the techniques. And then they come back and we do this induction again of the chocolate. So it's kind of a combination of longitudinal and in the moment. And so what these preliminary results show is here, this is the last one, the control condition, nothing much is happening there. Where we see the biggest action is the people who were instructed to become aware of the cravings and to disidentify from them. We have to see whether that holds. But what one implication of this is that you don't have to go through a big mindfulness meditation practice or so to do something about your cravings. You can just teach people very specific skills quite easily, quite rapidly, and it might be able for them to deal with their cravings and maybe then therefore lower their consumption of food. So the last thing I want to show you is a study we are currently doing where we are playing around with different visualization techniques, and we are doing this in patients with IBD. And this is basically exploratory because this was what I showed you, the study with the favorite activity or so. Maybe there are other ways to visualize.
What is IBD?
inflammatory bowel syndrome. So that's Crohn's disease and colitis. Okay, so for them it's whatever. There are many reasons why it's an interesting population because one is that many of them have to take medication that makes craving more frequent. Okay, so two are distraction techniques. One, the ones that we have used in our previous study, asking them to think of their favorite activity. But then also one that could be interesting is when you have a craving of something you don't really want to eat, can you think of something you also like, but which is much healthier? So we have here a mango as an example, right? It's very juicy, it's good, and it's not a bag of chips. So we want to see whether thinking of that instead can reduce the craving. And then two approach techniques where you kind of go more, okay, I have the craving, I accept it kind of approach. One is the urge surfing I mentioned, where, okay, I feel I have a craving, it's coming, getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and then experiencing that it goes away and I don't really have to do anything about it. And then the other one, to imagine the unpleasant consequences. So imagining if I now eat the entire big steak at Moishi's or something, how will I feel afterwards, bloated and reminded of my overweight and whatever. So imagining the unpleasant consequences of it. We have no data yet on it, but that is just exploratory to see what works best, and there's for each a theoretical reason behind it, why it should work or not work. Particularly with this unpleasant thing, you have, of course, the problem people don't like doing this, right? So the chances that they will apply this constantly is not so big, but these things are promising because people like doing this. They like being reminded of their last beach vacation. All right, so my conclusions, visualization techniques may be promising in promoting healthier eating habits, and implementation intentions are an easy way to support this habit change process.
Questions? Bill Comer, University of Alberta. I found your work interesting. I have a question, though. If you have this success with this craving and then the alternate techniques, how transferable is that, or do you have to exercise that with every kind of craving
or
any specific object?
No, that's... I would say it's totally, totally. I mean, we ask people to pick a craving, you know, of like coffee or whatever their most unwanted craving is, in these studies. But I would think that it is generalizable, that you can make yourself like a hit list of what are the people don't have 20 things they crave. It's really recurring. We know this from our studies. We ask them, what do you crave, and they run out of. Space, they don't run out of space, they list like three things or so that they really, really have unwanted cravings for. And so they can make these visualization plans for just these three things, and that should then work, I think.
More questions?
Have there been any studies that have compared the effectiveness of mindfulness techniques in populations who are more naturally inclined to be impulsive and reckless compared to?
I believe, I'm not so knowledgeable about it, about this question, but I believe there are studies in children with ADHD, for example, and mindfulness. So it's definitely a research that is being pursued. There is a literature on this, but I'm not very familiar with it.
Sorry, for the implementation intention when adding on the mental imagery, how often do they have to do that?
Well, whenever a craving arises.
Also, it's not like every night you think about it. And
no,
you
I mean, one can reactivate it. So, that, like, there's research on it where people are given booster sessions on it so that they don't let up doing it, because one can kind of get into the habit of not doing it anymore. But basically, it's also the implementation intentions, a lot of them teaches one to put the opportunity in place, right? So, for example, for exercising or so, it's always said, put your gym clothes in the entrance of your house so that when you see them, you know this is the signal, the cue to go exercising, right? So it's a lot about, and so when you have that habit in place, then you don't need any booster, it's just there. And only when something changes in your circumstances, you have to rechange your implementation intentions or so. So it doesn't really have to be repeated, it just has to make the commitment once and then potentially boost it after a little while or when the circumstances change.
I'm just wondering, with the whole concept of the action plans and the implementation intentions, it seems like they're very circumstantial based. So the idea of, I'm going to put the grapes in the fridge, so every time I open the fridge, but if I go through a crisis and I lose my house, so I don't have a fridge
exactly,
anymore.
Exactly, yes.
They don't have very strong underlying coping mechanisms related to them.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's 20 years of research on that, and these guys have really covered it all, right?
Yeah.
So you can make implementation intentions for plan Bs, you know? If that's not available, then I will do that. Or so if the gym is closed, then I will go jogging. So you can, if it's properly planned or so, then usually you can keep it up, right?
So strategies become quite complex for a given individual. They have to have, like, sort of...
I mean, if it becomes too complex, then it won't work anymore,
yeah,
right?
So
but in most circumstances, when one looks at that literature, for everyday habits and everyday lifestyle behavior, or so, it doesn't require a complex scenario, because we are very ritualized. The problem is we are very ritualized in bed. Not we, you probably are not, but people, some people are ritualized in maladaptive behavior, and they do it over and over and over again. So, and that's not complex. They just do the same thing over and over. It's just about switching it around and using these techniques to make them a new ritual, but with a better behavior.
Okay, so we're looking at sort of associated patterns they've already used in their life.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And to disconnect the association and make a new one.
Okay.
I have one question.
Removing, eliminating some of the imagery, because we sort of discussed incremental imagery, and there is a reason, for instance, some of the vegetables don't taste sort of good, say broccoli, etc. And there, in some cases, there's a genetic basis to it as well. So would it be possible, as sort of an idea, trying to remove imagery associated with some vegetables, rather than sort of inducing an imagery, so that, I don't know what the right term would be, neutralizing or eliminating it, and perhaps doing so in certain target populations, say individuals who have a genetic sort of sensitivity to have those kind of sort of taste. That would be interesting case study of integrating the social language.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that comes in the key words here are evaluative conditioning, and I think there they are trying to play around with this to take this away, the negative association with the taste of some vegetables and so on. I remember some literature on this. But it's interesting to think of that in terms of the images that people have. So I'll think about that. That's very interesting.
Some images are probably not pleasant either, so removing them also might lead to healthy.
Yes.
I think you have one question.
Yes. I'm with the UWOS in London. Have there been any studies that have shown that these techniques are effective in actually achieving weight loss in obese patients, because their underlying problems may be a little bit more complex than just cravings?
I know of studies that have integrated implementation intentions into weight loss programs with obese people. And, you know, we all know the long-term success of these things is, you know, difficult with anything, right? But that was definitely successful. There's a Polish researcher, I can't remember her last name, but she has published a study 2009 in Health Psychology, where she had a program augmented with implementation intentions and compared this to a normal Weight Watchers program, and it's in obese people, and it was much more doubled the weight loss over 6 months or so. And I'm interested in looking at the longer term effects, because this seems to lead to habits change. So there's a little bit, not yet much.
All right. If there are no other questions, we'll thank you.